I'm Brandi Cruz coming up today on Undivided. That's a nice levy you got there, Puyallup School District. It would be a shame if it failed. Plus, shocking details about the story we brought you regarding a 16-year-old girl whose parents allege that the state of Washington helped her run away from home. And state lawmakers want to put you in jail if you don't pay your car tabs. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support the show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. This is what we call scorched earth. What do they say? You mess with the bull, you get the horns. I'm not saying I'm a bull, but I'm upset. And I think a lot of parents and taxpayers are upset. And frankly, I feel a little disrespected, to be honest. So we've had in the last week, two significant stories out of a single school district, the Puyallup School District. One of them, which is an exclusive to us, is about a 16-year-old girl named Eleanor Holman, who's been missing for 2 months. Family has no idea if she's dead or alive. They blame the Puyallup School District and the state of Washington and a taxpayer-funded law firm with basically encouraging her to leave home because she wanted to be a boy. And then the other one, which we brought you exclusively last week, the fact that there are two men wrestling on the Puyallup female wrestling team, and you have a growing number of girls in that school district who feel very, very uncomfortable at Emerald Ridge High School, who don't want to share a locker room with boys and have gone to the school to no avail. So we've had these two stories on the boys in girls wrestling, which is like the most asinine sport to try to justify having biological males play against girls. The Puyallup School District didn't even bother to get back to us. We asked questions about it, no response whatsoever. On the story about Eleanor Holman, literally a missing child, okay? A missing child where the school district is being accused of being complicit in a child that's missing. This is almost the response we got from them, as we read to you yesterday, is almost worse than just not sending one. They sent us a response saying, as a matter of district practice, we do not participate in interviews or commentary style programs, including podcasts or radio style shows. Accordingly, the district will not be providing comment in response to your request. Slap in the face, worse than not even responding. And I don't know. If I were a school district that right now, as we speak, is trying to convince voters to pass a new school funding levy, I think I might be a little more polite to the podcaster who a lot of those parents and families and taxpayers listen to and watch. I think I might want to show that, I don't know, I care when community members have concerns over issues such as these. I would want to show that we can be, I don't know, responsive and transparent and responsible. But the Puyallup School District apparently doesn't want to do that. They don't want to explain to community members and taxpayers why your money is being used to help a child allegedly run away from home. They don't want to explain to community members and taxpayers who are footing the bill and paying their salaries why they're allowing biological boys to wrestle against girls. As I mentioned, Puyallup, one of several school districts that has a levy up for a vote right now. The election day for this replacement levy is February 10th. And so ballots are already, you know, in people's mailboxes. And so they'll get to decide whether to renew a levy coming up in about 2 weeks. One of the things that that levy is going to support are school counselors, which I think is interesting. School counselors, like the school counselor who's at the center of our story about Eleanor Holman, the school counselor who is giving Eleanor Holman information on gender clinics that she could attend during the day off campus, the school counselor who showed up to a court hearing with a 16-year-old girl who didn't want to live with their family anymore despite no history of abuse whatsoever, and the school counselor, without any evidence whatsoever, claimed that it wasn't a suitable home environment for the 16-year-old who really was just suffering from gender dysphoria. Yeah, maybe taxpayers and parents who are concerned about our story about Eleanor Holman might think twice about voting in favor of a school levy that supports school counselors like the one that I just mentioned. Also, the timing is interesting because tonight at Emerald Ridge High School, which is the high school that's letting biological boys make girls uncomfortable in the locker room and wrestle girls, tonight at Emerald Ridge High School from 5 to 7 p.m., they are having a listening session, little informational session on that levy they want passed so bad. Something would say that maybe if you ain't got nothing better to do on a Tuesday night, you might want to head on down to Emerald Ridge High School and maybe voice your frustration. Hey, Puyallup School District, you're coming to us and you want more money. You want us to renew taxes, to fund all these things. You can't even respond to simple questions about major issues. You can't even respond and tell us if it is true that you helped a girl or encouraged a girl to run away from her family, hid her location from her family who didn't know if she was alive or dead. If I were a parent or a taxpayer, I might want to show up and say, hey, before I vote to approve this levy, can you tell me what you're doing about the boys and the girls' locker rooms? Can you tell me why 13 girls came to the office of the principal and vice principal to express their concern and how it makes them uncomfortable, and you just handed them a little piece of paper that explained what transgenderism is? I don't know about you, but if I was a Puyallup taxpayer, I think I'd be at Emerald Ridge High School tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. Since they won't respond to my questions for comment on your behalf, maybe they'll respond to your questions directly. Now, I have a follow-up today that I gotta say, it would be stunning if we weren't living in Washington State and weren't so used to these things, but the story of Eleanor has now gone national after we aired the interview with her mother, Jody, on Sundays with Subscribers, and then we aired some clips yesterday. So again, to reset it up before I give you the new details that we've uncovered. So Eleanor is the child of a military family. They'd been living in North Carolina in 2019, moved to Washington State, went to enroll her in the Puyallup School District. Prior to enrolling her in that school district, her mom says, you know, she was having some mental health issues, but she seemed to be fairly well adjusted. So this is now 6-7 years ago. She seemed to be fairly well adjusted, had some anxiety issues, had some past trauma she was dealing with, but grades were good, reading was good, all of those things. And then she entered the Puyallup School District and things went downhill very quickly. The family found out that in junior high, the school counselor was giving their child, who'd never expressed any sort of gender dysphoria ever, information on gender clinics that she could go to during the day. And then the family finds out that the school district connected their daughter, who was just a preteen at the time, to an organization called Team Child. It's a taxpayer-funded law firm. Based on online records we found, they got about $600,000 from taxpayers in the state of Washington just in the year 2025 alone. And as their name suggests, they're Team Child. They say they provide free legal services and advocacy for youth involved in the juvenile justice system, child welfare, education, and mental health systems in Washington State. So here you have, because of Senate Bill 5599 in Washington State, where if your child questions their gender, basically the state just treats you like you're an abusive parent, and they just push you aside, and they keep secrets from you. So we've been looking more into all of this. We know that Eleanor, thanks to help from the school district and help from this law firm, she had run away from home. This is a couple years when she first started running away from home. She'd been gone about a month. Family gets a notice that she is taking them to court for an emergency guardianship hearing, okay? So here's the court case record, because there's a couple things I want to point out. So again, emergency guardianship hearing in Pierce County for minor guardianship custody. Of course, this is for Eleanor Holman. I want you to, and it was ultimately dismissed without trial because there's no evidence that the family is abusive or anything like that, but I want you to pay attention to the name of the petitioner. The name of the petitioner is a woman named Jean Shepherd. Jean Shepherd. So do you remember what Jody Holman, the mom of Eleanor, told us in our interview? She said, hey, we show up in court, super weird. Our daughter wants to be placed on an emergency basis with a different guardian, even though there's no credible allegations of abuse. You got the school sending two employees to take the stand and testify that our home environment isn't safe for our child, all because they assume that we wouldn't accept her gender ideology or something like that. And remember what Jody told us about the person who was petitioning for temporary custody of Eleanor.
Typically in these situations, they say, okay, is there a family member or is there a friend, somebody familiar with the child that the child can go to? Elle was placed with a stranger that she met on the street. Elle was not placed with somebody with DCYF. Elle was not placed with somebody who was familiar with the family at all. Elle wasn't placed with anybody, and that we knew. Elle was placed with a stranger.
So I heard that, and I gotta say, when we were taping that interview, I thought, there's no way. There's no way a judge or the state allowed a teenage girl to be placed even temporarily with a stranger she met on the street while she ran away. I really was like, I got to look further into that because that just sounds crazy. But we were running into roadblocks. We asked DCYF. They said, well, this is really an issue of the court. We reached out to the judge. Did you put this girl with a stranger? And the judge said, oh, I can't comment on these cases. You know, they wouldn't give us any comment. So going back to that court docket, the name is on there, right? Jean Shepherd. And so we got a little more information from the family on who exactly this stranger is. Let me introduce you to Jean Shepherd, the individual that a judge and the state of Washington saw fit to put Eleanor Holman with temporarily. Yes, that's a picture of an individual standing in front of naloxone, which is an emergency drug overdose reversal. And that picture is from a post from a group named Edgy Hop Olympia. What does this group do that this individual, Gene, is involved with? Well, Edgy Hop Olympia is a direct street and houseless outreach organization. It's the main program of the Olympia Harm Reduction Network. We've been providing direct street-based outreach 5 nights a week in downtown Olympia, Washington since 1999. And Gene is part of that. So, yes, Eleanor, a runaway youth who at the time had been gone for a month, somehow meets this Jean person. Parents don't know if it's she, her, or they, them. I'm going to go with they, them. Meets her on the street as a teenage girl and somehow convinces a court to give her an emergency hearing to be placed with a homeless outreach worker who's out there on the streets handing out harm reduction kits, which we know is needles and stuff so people can use drugs, to homeless individuals. And that is who a court saw fit just on a temporary basis, albeit the case was eventually dismissed without trial. But it's an emergency ex parte hearing comes in. This is who I want to be placed with. A judge would really place a vulnerable youth who thinks they're transgender, Eleanor was going by Elliot, with a they-them homeless outreach worker who she'd met on the streets? You might be thinking, there's no way in hell, Brandy. Well, let me introduce you to the judge that did that. Here are the Pierce County Commissioners. So Pierce County Commissioners, a little different than judges. They are employed by the court. They preside and decide over matters like civil juveniles, civil mental health, adoptions, etc. So the judge in question that heard this case is a judge named Doris Wolkins. Plug that name into the old Google machine. Here's an article on Doris Wolkins from Seattle's Gay News. Black queer woman aims to be elected to Pierce County Superior Court. April 2024. Are you putting all the pieces together yet? Are you putting all the pieces together for how a kid could end up being transed in a school district, being able to run away from home, location kept from the parents, granted a temporary placement in a home with someone they met on the streets? The trifecta, let's go over it. Again, trans, allegedly, a youth who thinks, a girl who thinks she's a boy, already had mental health issues, counselor starting in middle school in the Puyallup School District, is giving her information on gender clinics, not trying to help the family, not trying to help with any other mental health issues, her past trauma, laser focused on must be gender dysphoria, going behind the family's back, connecting her to a law firm that can help her separate from her family, who she doesn't think is going to agree with her desired gender. She runs away for a month out on the street, meets Jean Shepherd, sexual orientation in question, but I have my guesses, who's out there meeting homeless kids, connecting with homeless kids, and in less than a month gets granted temporary guardianship of this at-risk youth by a judge who's queer. Now, do you understand how it happened? For anybody who watched that story and said, no way. No way. And what did the mom say? Not because of abuse, no credible allegations of abuse. What did Jody say? Why did Jody say that all of this happened? Did you get the sense that they didn't think your home was fit because they thought you didn't support Eleanor's desired gender?
Yes.
How, and why did you get that feeling?
Because they expressed it.
They told her so. In the state of Washington, you can lose your kid even if someone along the way just thinks you might not fully accept their gender identity. Something that the family, by the way, never even did. They were so concerned with all the other stuff Eleanor was going through, past trauma, getting her help, getting her truancy issues back on track. The whole I want to be called Elliot thing was like, didn't even come to them directly from their own child and was the least of their concerns at the time. They weren't even pushing back against the gender dysphoria thing. It didn't matter, though, because you had a school and a school counselor and a taxpayer-funded law firm and I'm just going to say it, likely trans, non-binary, homeless outreach worker, and a black queer woman on the court who all worked together to do what exactly? To do what exactly? Help Eleanor? Eleanor's been missing for 2 months. Her family doesn't know if she's alive or dead. You tell me how you're helping her. Helping her by connecting her with some non-binary person who's out on the street handing out bump kits to drug addicts? No, you've ruined her life. You've ruined her life. All in the name of your radical gender ideology. It's sick stuff. And as I go back to the beginning, all of that to get a response from the Puyallup School District to all these legitimate questions, Nicole sent them a list of 10 questions, very calm, professional, straightforward, journalistic, about an issue as serious as this. And they have the audacity to tell us, as a matter of practice, we don't participate in interviews or common style programs like podcasts. So we're not going to communicate with you any further. It's because they know they're in the wrong and they don't want to answer questions about it. And so again, there's a meeting tonight. I have half a mind to go. I have half a mind to go. As busy as I am today. There's a meeting tonight, Emerald Ridge High School, the same high school allowing the boys on the girls wrestling team and just showing girls the door when they complain. Emerald Ridge High School, tonight, 5 to 7 p.m., where they're going to try to give you a sad sob story about how they just need money. They just need money. All the school districts, they're so broke. So they need you to re-up this levy. It's really important. Well, I think you ought to go there and ask them some questions about some of these things if they won't talk to me. Perhaps they'll talk to you. It's a nice levy you have there. It would be a shame if it failed, Puyallup. We're going to continue on this discussion of school funding coming up next, because you're going to start to see a lot of these levies, a lot of this sad sob story from school districts about how we're so poor. What was it from the Bellevue one? We can't afford scissors, trotting out five-year-olds or whatever to say, we can't even afford scissors in our class. So we'll talk a little bit more about why and how you shouldn't believe it, or you should at least be critical of it and ask the right questions. First, if you're thinking about, I don't know, leaving Washington State, or maybe you're just moving to a different town or across the street, reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. Hell, maybe you live in Puyallup and you want to move the hell out of the Puyallup School District. Well, Wes can help you with that too. Sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team specialize in taking on homes that maybe need a little extra TLC. That's one of the things they like doing. It's not absolutely necessary, but Wes is the son of a builder. And so if you know you need some cosmetic upgrades to your home and you just don't even know where to start, well, Wes can come in. He can manage those projects, even help you arrange it so you don't have to pay for any upgrades until closing, which takes the financial pressure off. And Jay says, truly a five-star experience from start to finish. Wes and his team are all about relationships, authenticity, and results. When it was time to sell my childhood home, they staged it beautifully, hosted open houses that felt like neighborhood events, and brought in 200-plus people. We got 4 offers and sold for $100,000 over asking. You won't find a better team. I agree. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way way to sell your home. All right, so a lot of sob stories from school districts right now about school funding. Oh my gosh, we can't afford even scissors, despite the fact that we're paying our school superintendents more than the president of the United States. So there's a couple reasons this is happening. Some school districts have levies that you've got ballots probably sitting on your counter for right now. And so they want you to re-up the levies. So they're going to make it sound like, oh my gosh, the world is ending if you don't re-up this levy. But then there's the other fight that's going on that's more broad. And that is they want to pass this millionaire's tax. Same thing they did with capital gains. When they were trying to keep the tax on capital gains, what did they say on the TV commercials? They showed like pictures of special needs kids and said, if you repeal capital gains, all these kids' lives are basically ruined and we won't be able to educate them at all. And so then people kept the capital gains tax. And so you'd think that's hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars a year. And they said this about funding education. Yet they're still in the poorhouse with education? And so they need to pass the millionaire's tax for education. It's because people are so soft. Come on, people, don't be so soft. It's because they use the kids. It's for the kids. It's for the children. My husband and I, we have this joke. It's probably sort of mean, but we went to, have you ever been to Cabo? So we went to Cabo first time. Nicole's been there. And they do this thing where these little fraudsters, they send their children out to prey on vulnerable tourists. And my husband is the biggest softy in the world. So we're out in this main area and this like just a bunch of kids. Please, sir, it's for my school. It's for my food. And my husband would give him $5. And I'd be like, you don't know what you've just done. And then within seconds, all these kids are coming around. You can see the adults sending them towards him. They're like, it's for my kid. It's for my food. It's for my school. So whenever I think about this, I just think of those little kids in Cabo, San Lucas, Mexico, and them saying, it's for my school. They know that people are soft. And they know that people support education, right? And so that's a good way to just keep drawing money out of people for something as dumb as the millionaire's tax, which is going to turn into an income tax on everyone, is how they get around it. So the Bellingham Public School District is an example of how they're doing this right now. So I just want you to be on the lookout for these things. It doesn't mean that maybe, you know, you have a levy that's being re-upped, that you shouldn't re-up it. I'm not telling you how to vote or what to do. But definitely understand the undercurrent here. And why you might be getting the world is ending, the sky is falling, notices like this. So this is from Bellingham Public Schools. It says, high school schedule update for 2026-2027, a message from Teaching and Learning. Dear staff, students, families, and community, as you may have heard, the schedules at Bellingham at the high schools will likely be changing starting fall of 2026. The high school schedule ad hoc committee was made up of teachers, principals, blah, blah, blah. So they went on and said that they're changing the proposed schedule. Students would take 7 classes per semester. A school week will likely include all 7 classes on some days and 3 or 4 classes on other days. They went in, just to give you, I'm not going to read this whole thing to you, but it basically says that they are going to move from an 8-period schedule to a 7-period schedule. It's going to basically eliminate some elective opportunities. It's going to take place for next school year. And why exactly are they changing the schedule now? They say the state of Washington continues to fail at adequately funding education, causing substantial budget challenges for all school districts, including ours. The 7-period schedule offers the best balance of budget savings and educational quality, helping retain valued programs and opportunities for students to explore their interests. So they're basically saying, we got to cut a whole class off the schedule, because the budget is in such a state of disarray. And they're not fully funding, they use that phrase, they're not fully funding education. That is such a lie. It is just a plain old lie. Back from McCleary, if you remember, the lawsuit over fully funded education, the state by law had to fully fund education. It's been fully funded for years. And then they keep passing all these new taxes. Think of all the new tax revenue, billions of new dollars that they have said in the last few years were for education, like capital gains. So they got that. This is for education. It's going to fully fund our schools. Okay, well, why are you coming to us now and saying, oh, no, school's still not fully funded? Right now in Washington State, the cost per pupil, the amount they spend per pupil, is nearly $20,000. It's one of the highest per pupil costs in the entire nation. And that has ballooned when it comes to per pupil funding. So the total annual revenue to schools has increased from $9.84 billion in 2010 to $18.77 billion in 2022, and it's gone up even higher from there, 91% increase in just those 12 years. A 91% increase. Guess what hasn't gone up? Guess what hasn't gone up during that time? The number of kids. It increased a little bit and then it dipped back down, and now we're dipping to like 2015 levels or something like that. So the schools have about the same number of kids. It's declining. And the amount of money we're spending on education, it used to be somewhere around like $8,000 a kid. Now it's $20,000 a kid. Where are they spending that money? Well, they're spending it on massive salaries. They're increasing staff and teachers, and the outcomes of kids, the learning outcomes, aren't getting better. They're getting worse. In fact, I think we have a stat here. The superintendent, Greg Baker, in Bellingham, he makes $400,000 a year. 400 grand. And some of these superintendents have like assistant superintendents, and they're making bank as well. And we reached out to the school district about this. How can you say that you're in a budget crisis when everybody's getting like double the amount per kid? And you're getting, sir, $400,000 a year. They haven't responded to us yet. But we just want you guys to be alert that this is what they feel like is the most sympathetic way. And this is all being driven by the teachers' unions. Bigger government, better for them. They think kids, 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 most sympathetic way to try to sell this narrative that schools are underfunded when schools are funded better than they ever have been before for worse outcomes, lower attendance. Insane. All right, I want to talk quickly about family farming. So there's a lot going on in the legislature during this short session, but this is a topic I've become more and more interested in over the past few years because there really seems to be from the far left this effort to do everything they can to put family farms out of business. You know, and they couch it as like, oh, this is pro-labor efforts, and this is trying to help farm workers and all these things. But for instance, there was a bill a couple years ago that they pushed that it messed with overtime, where it basically said that farms have to pay these workers different for overtime. And the workers were like, please don't do this because we're actually going to get less hours. And the Democrats are like, no, we know what's best for you. And they pushed it through. And what happened? Well, the workers are making less money overall. And so they're messing with these family farms. And there's so many family farms going out of business. This might be the worst effort yet. So there's a package of bills. One of them is Senate Bill 6045. And it has to do essentially with allowing for the rapid unionization of farm workers. Now, technically, farm workers can unionize right now if they get enough support. But this mandates farms to recognize unions if they meet a certain threshold. And it would allow for these farm workers to strike at any time. It could be in the middle of harvest, which, as you know, these are very set periods of time where you either pick the crop or you lose the crop. And so it's about really giving farm workers this maximum leverage for negotiations, have them rapidly unionize through outside forces, right? That are going to come and tell them all, you should do this, you should do this, you should do this. Rapidly unionize, do it during picking season or whatever it is, where either we pick that or you lose everything. And it's like holding family farms hostage. So I spoke with Rosella Mosby, who's the head of the Washington State Farm Bureau. And first I just asked her generally about the health of family farming in Washington. Can you kind of characterize what the state of family farming is right now in Washington?
Oh, it's rough. We are losing 2 farms a day based on the last census. I did see some numbers last week. I failed to retain them, but we are in dire straits here. People are selling their property and getting out, and that property is turning into houses, and we are just straight up losing farmers and local food access. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. We have labor challenges. We have market challenges. We have input price challenges. There are so many layers to agriculture. I think that the general consumer has no idea. We're paying the highest wages in the nation. And I think a lot of our farmers, while that's difficult, they pay above and beyond minimum wage because they're trying to keep their people. So it's a difficult path in agriculture these days.
Would you say, you referenced it a little bit there, but would you say your challenges are fundamentally state level challenges or federal challenges?
I think there's probably some frustration around tariffs on the federal level. So that is impacting input costs. But I would say our challenges are, I feel as a farmer, and I know I hear from my Washington Farm Bureau members that they feel the state is making their livelihoods a little more difficult to maintain than the federal level at this point.
Yeah, so you've got all these family farms closing down. They're going to be taken over by these big conglomerates, which is like the opposite of what the left signals that it wants. So it's very bizarre. And then they're pushing this bill to try to make it easier to unionize at a point where you could really hold the whole industry hostage. Rosella explains what would happen, for instance, on her family farm if this bill were to pass.
So we grow vegetables in South King County. We supply to Charlie's, Safeway, Kroger store, so Fred Meyer, QFC. Our irrigation crew works 6.5 days a week. They are the crew that works the most. If your plants don't have water and it's hot out, your plants will start to get the signal that they're no longer needed, which means your production goes down. Zucchini grows 1/4 inch per hour in the hot sun. So we pick every zucchini field every day to day and a half. If you don't pick when that zucchini is the grade size, then you can't sell it on the market. You cannot put it in a box. If you're not getting water, you're not picking the fruit, you're done within 7 days. Say the temperature is mild and you have a longer window. If it's 90 degrees out, you're done. Like within a couple of days, 2 or 3 days, your season is over. Your produce buyer won't buy from you because you don't have product. So you've lost your in for the season. That produce buyer's responsibility is to put groceries on the shelf in their store. And so they will go out of country. They'll go out of state. They will search for whoever they can buy zucchini from, which means it's probably going to come from Mexico or California. Cucumbers, same. No longer providing to grocery stores is a problem. But when we are in production, we have a lot of produce that goes to local food banks. And so that takes a hit as well. When you're bringing stuff in from out of country, it doesn't always hit the food bank like it does, say, from our farm. So First in, first out. You pick it, you put it in the cooler, and then the next day you pick it, but the stuff you picked before stays in the cooler in the front, right? And so when you have an overabundance, you share that with local food banks. And so this is really a community issue from my perspective. We need to make sure that we are able to not have our food production essentially held hostage because of a strike.
And add on top of that, the fact that they would get paid for striking. Because last year, Democrats passed pay for striking workers. So now you'd have a situation with maximum leverage that could put a family farm under just like that in a matter of days. And they have no motivation to get back because they're getting paid while they strike. What is the end goal with all of this? Is it to keep putting family farms out of business? So you've got China come in and buy all this agricultural land and control our agricultural industry? I mean, because that really is if I was trying to do that, I would pass some of the pro-farm worker bills that Democrats have passed in recent years. And I would definitely push this one through. All right, coming up next, State Senator Jaime Peterson flat out lying in emails to constituents about that initiative killer bill. 3 lies in a single email, easily disprovable. In fact, fact-checked by a member of his own political party. We'll discuss in our segment, Unbelievable. First, are we in a tech bubble? Are we in an AI bubble? Are you worried about what those things could mean for your retirement portfolio and whether it's exposed to too much risk? Well, our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital, this Thursday, January 29, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, he's hosting his New Year Reset free live webinar, totally free to sign up. You can passively listen. You could be more of an active participant if you'd like. You can sign up knowyourriskpodcast.com. He'll discuss the impact AI could have on the market, how Bulwark is focused on risk management, and how they incorporate value-based principles in managing retirement portfolios. And of course, they're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So do a few things at DailyRiskPodcast.com. Sign up for this Thursday's live webinar. You can also subscribe to Zach's daily market recap or schedule your own free Know Your Risk portfolio review, all at KnowYourRiskPodcast.com, KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. Senator Jamie Peterson has absolutely no shame. He doesn't care about his constituents, because if you cared about your constituents, you wouldn't lie to them in emails. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. So as you know, Democrats are pressing forward with their two bills dubbed initiative killers, Senate Bill 5973, House Bill 2259, and they seek to make the initiative process that is constitutionally protected in Washington more difficult. They say you got to go out and collect 1,000 signatures before you can even start the initiative process officially. They say you can't use pay-per-signature paid signature gatherers, because that will just lead to too much fraud. But what they really want to do is just make it increasingly difficult for anyone who dissents from what Democrats are doing to challenge it in any way. So they've effectively eliminated the referendum process, because they add emergency clauses onto the end of bills, which make them referendum-proof. So now they're attacking the initiative process in any way possible. So we had a viewer said, "Hi, Brandy and Nicole. I thought I would forward a message from Senator Jamie Peterson sent to me today, even though I did not ask for a response to my leave the comment for one of these bills." So one of our wonderful viewers is a constituent of Senator Jamie Peterson's. That sucks. Lives in Seattle. Left a comment for House Bill 2259, one of the initiative killers, and got this response from Senator Peterson. I'm sure it's just from his office, but it says, "Best wishes, Jamie. Thanks for your message. I respectfully disagree, and I am co-sponsor of Senate Bill 5973, the Senate companion to House Bill 2259. We have begun to see a pattern in the last several years of initiative sponsors filing several dozen different versions of the same initiative to try to get subtle variations in the ballot title language from the Attorney General's office. Because the fee for filing an initiative is only $5, but the cost to taxpayers from this practice is substantial, requiring a showing of public support will likely make initiative sponsors more careful about how many versions of a particular initiative they will file." He goes on to say, "We have also learned that paying gatherers by the signature creates incentives for fraud." Lie, lie, lie. So one of the lies in here is just brazen, and that is the lie that it only costs $5 to file an initiative. It used to only cost $5, but that hasn't been the case now for a couple years, something that you would think that Senator Jamie Peterson, who is the sponsor of the Senate version of this bill, would know before he put the lie in an email, probably not just to this constituent, but to others. And you don't have to take it from me. Secretary of State Steve Hobbs, a Democrat, when he gave testimony on Senator Peterson's bill last week in Olympia, he gave the senator information that debunks all three of those lies. Here's a reminder.
"The job of the Secretary of State's office is to facilitate the referendum initiative process, and for this reason, I can't support this. This is add another layer of burden, and I get what you're trying to get at. You don't want the title shopping and the number shopping that used to happen. Number shopping doesn't happen anymore. And I saw, when I became Secretary of State, a number of frivolous initiatives that are being filed. In 2020, 346, 2021, 211, 22, 316, and so on. That's why, thanks to Secretary Sam Reed, who introduced a piece of legislation when he was in, allowed for the Secretary of State's office to do rulemaking to increase the fee. I increased the fee from $5, set in 1914, $256, because that's how much $5 is worth if you extrapolate. I didn't go any more than that. And what happened was a significant drop. I'm proud to announce only 47 initiatives have been filed."
So Secretary of State Steve Hobbs, a Democrat, and I'm sorry, he debunked two of these. We can debunk the third. Debunked two of these. This idea that this continues to be a problem with them filing multiple versions of the same thing, trying to shop for different titles, and that's because it only costs $5. No, Secretary of State Steve Hobbs told them to their faces and reminded them that it no longer costs $5, it costs $156, because he finally, after many, many years, adjusted it for inflation. So he said those things that Jamie Peterson is saying in this email to a constituent that are a problem, the Secretary of State says they're not a problem anymore. And it's not like the $5 fee just changed. This is an article from March of 2024. Washington hikes initiative filing fee for the first time in over a century. And it talks about the fact that Steve Hobbs changed the fee from $5 to $156. And it took effect in January of 2025. So it took effect more than a year ago, a year and a month ago. So how come it is that Senator Jamie Peterson is still telling constituents who oppose the initiative killer bill in email something that he knows is not true? Or if he doesn't know it, he's incredibly incompetent and his name shouldn't be on that bill at all. And then he's spreading a lie that the Secretary of State already debunked. And as to the fraud line in his email, when he said, "We have also learned that paying gatherers by the signature creates incentives for fraud." Remember when the union hacks came to the hearing and made that claim, and they were asked, "Do you have any proof of that?" And they couldn't give any proof. And it turns out the one example of fraud with gathering signatures was from 2008. It was a left-wing hack with SEIU who submitted at least, if not more, 19 fraudulent signatures on an income tax initiative, was charged criminally for it, and they weren't even being paid by the signature. So there's no evidence of fraud in pay per signature. So three strikes, you're out, Jamie. Three lies, you're out. All right, let's do a little double dose of unbelievable. You will not believe this. That's why it's unbelievable. So Senate Bill 6176, this is going to get a lot of attention. It is a bill that would put you in jail if you don't pay your car tabs. Oh, I'm not making that up. Senate Bill 6176 has to do with an act relating to the enforcement of failure to renew an expired vehicle registration. Okay, so here's a couple excerpts from the bill. Failure to make initial registration before operating a vehicle on the public highways of the state is a traffic infraction. A person committing this infraction must pay a fine of $529, which may not be suspended or reduced. It is a gross misdemeanor for a resident, as identified in state law, to register a vehicle in another state, evading the payment of any tax or vehicle license fee imposed in connection with registration. It is punishable in lieu of the fine in subsection blah, 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 this section, for a first offense up to 364 days in the county jail. So if you dare try to circumvent Washington State's very costly tabs, then they'll put you in jail for a year. Now here is, and all of this comes about, of course, because there were news stories that we shared maybe 6 months ago or so, where they have like 500,000 people in the state who have expired tabs, who aren't paying their tabs at all. Why aren't they paying their tabs? Well, because the people of this state, in a lot of instances, one, they're just too damn expensive with all the Sound Transit stuff. But two, the people of this state repeatedly have passed voter initiatives seeking $30 car tabs. And what happens? Every single time the state undoes it. They go in and they just say, "We don't care, the voters want $30 car tabs. We're not doing that." So, I mean, what should you do as the voters when you vote for something over and over and over, and the state just says, "Kick rocks, we don't care," and you're still stuck with these $500, $600, $700, $800 fees for tab renewals? And so now they're like, not only are we not going to give you what you voted for, $30 car tabs, we're going to increase and have this law laying out all the penalties if you don't do what we tell you to do when they didn't do what you told them to do. And the worst part, oh my gosh, it's sponsored by a Republican, Senator Curtis King. Here he is.
We have just moved a group of State Patrol up into the King County area, Seattle, and the surrounding area to look at finding unexpired tabs. And this bill is going to hopefully will help address that, because we believe that between what the state charges and what Sound Transit is charging, it gives people incentives to try and not have to pay it. And so this is a way to try to address that. We think that there are millions of dollars out there that are not being collected, which is not fair to everyone else that pays these these car tabs.
Yeah, well, it's not fair that a bunch of people, the majority of voters, on multiple occasions have asked for $30 car tabs, and the state legislature told them to go F themselves. So there's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of unfairness to go around, don't you think? And Senator King sits on transportation. They deal with the transportation budget, and transportation budget has very few streams of revenue. And so they need this revenue in order to not have to further increase gas tax or whatever it is, I don't know. But he got State Senator Mark Elias, a Democrat, to co-sign this with him. So it is technically a bipartisan bill. But I think the only person there for the committee hearing was Tim Iman, who, of course, was the guy who ran the $30 car tab initiatives.
Three times the voters said, we don't want to pay any more than $30. And three times they were told they were too confused by a measure to give it to them. The last time, when the state Supreme Court ended up overruling a King County judge that actually upheld the initiative, this legislature did nothing. You have this anger, this frustration, this enormous anger because the voters are clearly voting for something, making it emphatic, and yet they're being told they're confused. And a handful of people say, you know what? I want to be peaceful. I don't want to riot. I don't want to throw rocks, but I want to do something peaceful. This is one thing they can do, refuse to renew. We're talking about a minuscule amount of money. We're talking budget dust that you guys are missing out on. You ripped us off of billions of dollars because the state Supreme Court said that we were confused by the measure. But instead of taking those billions and being happy with it, you're now fighting for a couple extra crumbs that we've got. All I'm asking you to do is to just realize how angry people are about this. And when people are angry, they look for an outlet for that. And I want them to be peaceful. I do not want things to go in the other direction. And if you don't do something, when you do absolutely nothing, Gary Locke did something. He listened to the voters. When you guys did nothing, all you're doing is inviting another initiative activist to do it again.
Yeah, I agree with him. It is a peaceful form of protest, right? And I think still that if you haven't renewed your tabs and you go out there and a state, I mean, they're sending out the state patrol to find this. But I don't know. I think in a lot of scenarios, if you tell the state trooper, this is a protest and they didn't agree to $30 car tabs. We've passed it three times. What do you want us to do? I think there's a lot of state troopers who let you off the hook for that. So just to be clear, this bill, the only way they'd send you to jail is if you tried to circumvent it by like registering your car somewhere else so you could pay lower tabs or whatever it is and avoid Washington tabs. But then it just makes clear some of the penalties if you decide not to renew your car tabs or not to get them at all. But not getting them all was already something punishable by a fine. So, you know, democracy. What's the point even, really? When you say you want something, you don't get it. So it's okay for them to not give you something that you voted for, but it's not okay for you to not do something because you voted to not do it. It's very strange. All right, we'll get to national news coming up next. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. They're down in Olympia this time of year advocating on your behalf, rhawa.org. And also, they advocate for you every single day as a small to mid-sized landlord, making sure that you can follow the laws, deal with this whole stupid rent control issue. Maybe you've got a squatter issue going on. They can help you walk you through the process, make sure you get all the necessary paperwork and all of that. So rhawa.org, rhawa.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. Here's a doozy. So a connection to some of the crime and the fraud that's been happening in Minneapolis to Washington State. So you remember this video from Nick Sorter? It was the protesters in Minnesota who were smashing those federal vehicles and they were stealing stuff from them. And there was a lot of paperwork in there. And the paperwork, some of these streamers were like reading names off the paperwork out loud. So there was all this, I mean, they stole the guns too. So yesterday, and I would say more so than the guns. I mean, the gun is an issue, right? But there's stolen guns and stuff on the street all the time. That paperwork with private information about agents and judges and whatever it is, I mean, that was almost the more concerning aspect of this. So yesterday, the Minneapolis FBI posted that a woman in Spokane was arrested for using some of the information obtained in that video to threaten an agent. Shocking that that would happen. FBI says threatening an FBI employee and their family will not be tolerated. Yesterday, FBI agents in Spokane, Washington, at the request of FBI Minneapolis, arrested a woman after she left three disturbing voicemails threatening to kill an FBI agent, his wife and child, because of the agent's employment in Minnesota. If you threaten to harm law enforcement officers or their families, the FBI will hold find you and hold you accountable. And this has been happening a lot. I don't know if they've identified this other guy who was leaving voicemails for agents saying that they're going to kill him and all this stuff. It was just horrible. So, and there's a lot more information out there. And Lord only knows what the activists are doing with it. All right. The California Post is now live. That's exciting. So New York Post, they started a California Post. I think that's going to be very good for California. Sort of this sane media thing. I wish we'd get Washington State Post or something like that. Just add to the media ecosystem of actual good, truthful journalism. So one of their first stories, I actually think this is their first cover of the West Coast edition. Trump tells feds to take over permitting to fast track wildfire rebuild. Says help is on the way. So at this stage, not a single home in the Palisades has been rebuilt since the fire there. Not a single home. When Trump went there afterwards, it was like, we need to speed this up, do it as fast as possible. Not a single home. So headline, Trump signs executive order for feds to take over LA's nightmare wildfire rebuild in huge boost for victims. So sidestepping, says thumb twiddling California Democrats with the executive order that aims to fast track all of this and the thousands that were left without a home. Trump told the California Post on Friday in an exclusive Oval Office interview, I want to see if we can take over the city and state and just give the people their permits they want to build. So it's a 7-page order. I'm sure, of course, that it's going to be challenged and it's all going to be caught up legally. But look, if California really wanted and LA really wanted to help rebuild, those homes would have been in process of being rebuilt. They don't want to, though. They want to turn that into like probably affordable housing or whatever they can do to grow the size of government. They don't want these big mansions to be able to rebuild, be rebuilt in the Palisades. So they're absolutely dragging their feet. So, because if they wanted to get them rebuilt, they'd be more than happy to accept any help that they could get from the federal government at all. And they wouldn't fight Trump on this at all. Like, oh my gosh, you're going to bring the feds in and help resources to get all this streamlined and get these people back in their homes? Great. They're not going to do that. They're going to fight him every step of the way in court while you still have empty lots for now a couple years. It's just absolutely insane, the level of ineptitude. Here's Gavin Newsom. Instead of finally sending to Congress the federal relief Los Angeles needs to rebuild from last year's firestorms, Donald Trump continues to live in fantasy land. Mr. President, you can actually speed up recovery by providing the assistance that survivors have been waiting for. There's not a single survivor that blames Trump for this. You can find the looniest of lefty Democrats whose house was burned in the Palisades, and they're not going to blame Donald Trump for it. They know who's at fault. They know who's at fault for the wildfires not being able to be put out as quickly, Gavin Newsom. They know who was overseas. Was she in Nigeria or something? At the time when the fires broke out, when there was a warning of a possibility of fires, LA Mayor Karen Bass. And they know who stood in the way every step of the way for permitting. Oh, you can't even start to clean up without the government's permission. None of them blame Donald Trump for it because it's not Donald Trump's fault. I look forward to many more gems from the California Post. I think that will be quite the source of good stories for us. All right, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll coming up next. First, Valentine Roofing, our wonderful show sponsors, have been awarded the best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest for 3 years in a row. Why would you use anyone else? Plus, they support our show, which is reason enough to use them. If you need, let's say, maybe you need new gutters, something like that, exterior cleaning of your siding, something I need really bad at our house right now. And maybe you just need a new roof. And this time of year, it's good to talk about heat insulation. So the combination of your attic insulation and your roof, man, up to 25% of your home's heat can be lost through your attic. So if your furnace is working overtime, it's time to call Valentine. And right now, when you bundle attic insulation with any new roof, you'll save an additional 10% off the entire budget, and they have exceptional financing options. So no matter what your home needs, you're guaranteed the Valentine experience, seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, and extra mile service, even in winter weather. So lock in your winter bundle savings. Call 206-ROOFING today. Again, call 206-ROOFING, and please make sure to tell them that you heard about them on Undivided. All right, let's get to our subscriber show poll for subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X. I wanted to see how many of you have some sort of school levy that you're voting on this year. So I asked you just that. Nicole, do you have one?
I'm not sure.
do you not know?
I haven't seen anything, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, we've got
one. I'll have to check into
We've got one. It's going to be a big
I just haven't been.
Nope.
It's going to be no if I have one.
I don't even care at this point. It's like, no more money. Even if it's renewing an existing levy, nope. At this point, you've lied to us too many times about being in the poorhouse from an educational perspective. You're not showing you can be responsible with any money. So hell no. And no, across the board.
And no one can. I'm just so sick of this. And I actually, really quick, I'll say, I just got a response from Bellingham Schools during the segment, actually.
Oh, I wonder if they're watching live.
I don't know.
Hello, Bellingham Schools.
But really, all they sent me was this explanation that they sent to the legislature saying, we would like more money, pretty much. And it just lists the same things that we've been hearing over and over again. Okay. They want it not to be based on student numbers. They want it to be based on, because they're like, that doesn't change what we need, even though they have less students. But we all know what they're saying,
that
right?
Doesn't make any
they
sense.
Don't have they didn't actually ask my question.
Answer your question.
Answer my question.
Of course not. So. Nobody answers our questions these days. Cowards.
Really. But I appreciate they responded an email.
Apparently they can respond to podcasters, but the Puyallup School District can't. And hell, Bellingham's way more liberal than Puyallup.
Yeah, it is.
First of all, I've always had a great relationship with everyone in Puyallup. What's happening here? I don't like it. I feel disrespected. And you know what happens when I feel disrespected? It's not good for anyone. All right. Joan says, so first of all, 76% of you say yes, you've got some sort of school levy to vote on. Joan says, I'm voting no on all of them. When are they telling you, when they tell you it's only $3.40 per 1,000, whose house is 1,000? Why not 100,000? These have gone up 40% and 55%. Yeah, I do hate that. It's like per 1,000. So you've got to go in there and do the math. Just do it per 100,000. It's way easier. It's not hard to type things into a calculator, but it's almost like they want the number to look so small. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, it's just $3 per 1,000. Sick of Washington says, I work at an elementary school and have never voted for their levies. My superintendent is the one that makes as much as the president, if not more. And there is no waste there is so much waste in the district. I think the superintendent and all his assistants should give up their bonuses. They always claim they are in it for the kids, but the first place they make cuts in the buildings is where it affects the kids the most. How about cutting from the admin building? Pisses me off. Bob.
Yeah, as long as superintendents keep making what they make in this state, you don't get money from me.
Right. Greg says, Everett School District has two, an operations renewal levy and a new capital construction levy. Oh, okay. Jill says, I'm embarrassed to say I work for the Puyallup School District. I haven't personally witnessed all the craziness, but I do know that admin downtown is corrupt as hell. There's more than 10 people that make $350,000 a year. They're all useless. Way too much to make for the little they do. I have a coworker that was sexually harassed last school year. She tried to expose it and got the guy fired. But nope, they kept him and she made new excuses for him and let my friend leave the district. Crazy. Anyway, yeah, so a lot of you have a decision to make on school levies. So let me know. Maybe send me pictures of the levies that you've got and what school district and how you plan to vote on them. I'd like to see that.
Everett does have a levy, so yes.
Yeah, two. Oh, yeah. Duh. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Just told everybody where she lives.
Yeah.
All right, some comments on the state kidnapping kids. Let's see. Matt, I cannot believe the Puyallup School District is acting this way. Oh, by the way, I live here and just placed my no vote into the mail today. Good for you. Tracy Andrews, it shouldn't matter who's asking. They should give an answer or comment. Do they do the same to parents? Transparency is very important with this issue. And that's the thing is like, all the parents who are concerned can email, but that's what the media is supposed to do, is ask questions on your behalf. And most people who watch this show, I think, are pretty fed up with legacy news. And you think the legacy news outlets that they would respond to are ever going to ask questions about something like this? No. So we're the option. We're the ones asking. So they get to dictate, even though they're funded with taxpayer funds, they get to dictate who journalistically they have to respond to? Outrageous. Let's see. Nancy Campbell, here's some gas money, Brandy, to get to the school meeting. Thanks. Yeah, gas is high too. Let's see. Kathleen, I stopped voting yes on Seattle school levies after they moved from left of middle to the left of left. I also used to work for SSD, Seattle School District, and saw so much waste. The SEA union began to spend members' dues supporting people like Sawant. That was the final straw for me, as it should be. On the legislature taking aim at farmers again, Sharon says, this farm policy is coming from all those Dems with bumper stickers that say, no farms, no food. I bet they love their farm-to-table restaurants, and I bet they love their locally grown produce, right? What do you think you're doing with all of this?
Supporting farmers markets, all the things.
Crazy. Let's see. They say Dems are going to blame Dems are going to blame Trump for deporting workers instead of taking responsibility. All the farmers and people who work in that industry who've been on the show have said, not to say there aren't issues at the federal level, but that the state issues far outweigh whatever sort of issues are coming from the federal government.
I still don't think they're getting their CCA rebates.
Some of them are, I've heard, but I don't think it's been fully implemented. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. On Jamie Peterson just lying about the initiative process, Mark Madison says that's called democracy to gather signatures for an initiative. Yeah, I thought they cared about democracy. Mm-hmm. On jail time for car tab fee scoff laws. And just to be clear, I think that was already in the bill. The new part is talking about reinforcing some of the penalties, et cetera, for not renewing your car tabs. Shasha Windfeather. Wait, isn't this the party that wanted to prevent car tabs being the only reason they can pull you over? Yes. They were like, oh, it's racist just to find reasons to pull people over. It'll lead to profiling. But now they're send out the patrol.
Well, one of these parties supporting this. But really, it's only two senators that are willing to sign their names to this one.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
Praiser Praise gave us $150 super chats just saying we want to support the show. That is so nice. Wow. Thank you so much. Chuck Heller, I would like to get exposure to House Bill 2320 and 2321 that will basically make 3D printing worthless or illegal by use of government-sponsored nanny software. Interesting. So if you're interested in 3D printing, go look at House Bill 2320 and 2321. We'll take a look at those too, because I'm not familiar with them. And Little Miss J will end with a nice little super chat. This is our donation to support you, Brandy, in you having a wonderful hair day. Oh, thank you. I didn't even shower this morning. Much love and respect. Look, every other day with this hair. Every other day. One day, I keep thinking, because I get so many questions about my hair, I need to put out a little
tutorial.
Influencer video, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I can pretend to be a beauty influencer for one day. Give away all my secrets. Mm-hmm. All right, good comments per the usual. We'll get to our closing sanity check. Washington State auditor losing it on a reporter. First, I have told you guys for years now to look into becoming a member of the Firstmark family to deal with all your insurance needs. I'm a member of the Firstmark family. Nicole is. Our show is. And that's because it's exceptional service. They're going to make sure every year you have the best insurance that is actually going to cover you in the event that the unthinkable happens, which if you don't have insurance, that's actually what you need. What is the point? You're just wasting your money. But also they want to make sure you have it at the best price. And I hear from undivided viewers and listeners all the time that when they made that call to Firstmark, they thought, why didn't I do this sooner? Because now I'm saving thousands of dollars a year. Connie said, I'm very impressed with Firstmark. I learned about them through watching Brandy, and I was looking for a different car insurance company. So I made the call. I received an email from Chase. He was able to save me a considerable amount on my car insurance. Super easy to work with, no high pressure sales ever. And you know why they don't have high pressure sales, Connie? Because you never pay them anything. You don't pay Firstmark anything for their services. And they always just want to make sure that they have your best interest in mind. And for some undivided viewers, that means that they say, hey, we're going to turn away your business because you actually have great insurance at a great price. And we don't even think we can do any better for you. That's the sign of an honest company. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Man, I don't know what's going on with Washington State Auditor Pat McCarthy. So I was celebrating her last week because she's a Democrat and she was doing interviews with Como News and saying, no, actually there is a significant problem with the Department of Children, Youth, and Families and with child care funds. She says, we can't say there's fraud per se, but we haven't been able to properly audit $415 million in federal payments that DCYF gave to child care providers. So she was like going against this narrative from her own party that nothing to see there, nothing to see there. But then she did this interview with our friend Carlene Johnson of the Center Square and has like a complete meltdown over the line of questioning.
Many of them are receiving, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars over a few months' time in subsidies. So that's
Have you reported that to DCYF or reported?
Well, see, here's the thing. It's not my job. It's right there, publicly accessible information. So I would say, if you're auditing these large payouts, it would make sense. It's easy to see. You go to childcare where, find the address or the name of the provider. Then you go to fiscal.wa.gov, type in the name of the provider, and boom, it comes up and shows, wow, he got $250,000 in 5 months last year. And it shows he cares for six kids at his home. I mean,
First of all, I would say as a mother of four and with 11 grandkids, and all of them have been in daycare at some point because all of them are working families. I would not want a citizen going to my child's daycare.
Okay, and not, that's not the point. That's not the point. That is irrelevant. I have every right to go there as a reporter.
If you have a concern, there are people that you can give that information to. Give it, send it to us. You have a credible incident, send it to us.
I mean, that is absolutely insane. Sorry, I went to black there. That is absolutely insane. So now Pat McCarthy, who was being totally reasonable about it last week, is now adopting the same narrative that Democrats were using to be hostile toward Carlene and other reporters last week. Oh, don't go knock on doors. I wouldn't want you doing that. That's creepy. And then saying, oh, have you notified DCYF that? What do you mean? I'm doing an interview with the state auditor as a journalist. I'm telling you. Why do I have to go to DCYF? It was the same thing Democrats told Carlene last week. Okay, Carlene, if you think you found fraud, have you told DCYF? No, I'm telling you. You're the lawmakers who are dealing with this. You're the auditor. It's absolutely insane. And the more they push back, the more that there is absolutely something there. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you'd like to support our show, we would love to have you as a paid subscriber. You get access to Sundays with subscribers, you get to participate in our daily show polls, live Q&As, etc. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show for $5 and you're on your way. We will see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.